Hello everyone, Tomasz here, and it's about time for the next episode of Fujilove Podcast. Today, my guest is an official Fujifilm ex-photographer from Canada, Nathan Elson. Nathan will be one of the photographers speaking at the Fujilove Live event in London later in October this year. So I was really, really looking forward to recording this conversation with him. We are talking about portraiture, about cameras and lenses Nathan uses for his work, and about his approach to photographing people in general. Nathan is also known for his Lightroom presets pack, a set of presets he actually uses himself for his own work. And we have a nice surprise for you today. Nathan generously offered Fujilove listeners and readers a 20% discount on the entire pack of those presets. So make sure you head over to fujilove.com and check out the latest post. You will find all the necessary links to the presets page and Nathan's portfolio, and also a couple of sample images edited with his custom presets. For now, enjoy my conversation with Nathan Elson.
This is Fujilove, a podcast for Fujifilm X users from around the globe. Thank you for tuning in.
Hello, Nathan. We made it. We can reveal it to listeners. to the listeners, I think that last week we were having some technical difficulties, but now the technology seems to be working. So welcome once more to the Fujilove podcast. And nice having you here.
Yeah, it's nice to finally be here.
Yeah, so I have been following, you know, your work, your photography for a while now. I mean, like a couple of years for sure, and then at some point I discovered that you are a fellow Fujifilm ex-photographer, right? Is this correct?
Yes. Yeah, you bet.
So you are the Fujifilm photographer for Canada, right?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, the last couple of years now.
When did it start for you, the Fujifilm, you know, story?
It was a couple of years. Whenever the Fuji X-E2 was released, I did a video with the Camera Store TV, and Fuji saw it, saw my work, liked what I was doing, and just gave me a call and said, "Hey, we've got this Fuji X photographer program, and we really like what you're doing, and wondering if you'd be interested in joining up."
Mm-hmm. And what made you, you know, in the first place to actually look at this Fuji camera at all? Like what
I was. Yeah, like originally I had the X-Pro1, and I bought it as, you know, kind of like a walk-around family-type camera, but I started falling, like, in love with the form factor of it and, you know, the lenses and everything like that, and it started kind of creeping its way into my actual photographer work. Mm-hmm. And, and then just eventually it kind of, now I'm shooting with the X-Pro2 with my full kit of lenses, and it actually makes its way, you know, onto set quite often.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What was it, mainly this form factor and, you know, the functionality and the tactiles, or what role did the actual picture quality play in this transition?
Well, I mean, when I was originally looking for the camera, I just wanted something that had really nice picture quality, but also looked, you know, nice, something I could carry around and be a cool looking camera. That's, you know, where the X-Pro1 came in. But now, mm-hmm. with the X-Pro2, I don't know, there's something about the camera itself, especially when I'm shooting on location, that kind of thing. It's just, it's the small form factor, the lenses are so crazy sharp, and it's reliable. So it's just something easy for me to kind of take when I'm moving around place to place really quickly. And it just, it's worked really well in that regard for me.
Mm-hmm, so. Mm-hmm. And so you are using it for your professional work, right? These days?
Yeah. In terms of my actual commercial work, it's probably somewhere between like 30-40% of the time.
Okay. And how are the clients reacting? Do they notice the difference, or they just don't know about it? What's the, you know, it's very often, you know, it's extremely interesting topic, I think, because the final client, I don't shoot commercial, but I shoot some portraits, you know, some concerts and stuff. And in the end, the client doesn't really care, I think, right? Or do they ask?
No, it's one of those things where, no, well, I mean, sometimes when I'm on set, they look and they go like, oh my, you know, what kind of camera is that type thing? But they think it's a cool looking camera. It's gotten to the point now where, you know, they've hired me for my work. They're not hiring me for the gear that I bring on mm-hmm. set. So mm-hmm. when they get the final images and they're super pumped and everything is good, it doesn't matter what I shot it with type thing. So it's they just trust me to use whatever tool best fits the job. And when I anytime I've ever used the X-Pro2 on set, they've always just kind of commented on, you know, how beautiful of a camera it is. Mm-hmm. Whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's never, oh, why would you bring that tiny camera? It's like, oh, that's a nice camera.
Right.
So
yeah, that's the image that counts, right, in the end.
And, yeah, it's the product that they hire me for, not what I
right,
create it with.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Nice, nice. So you are shooting commercial, but I looked at your portfolio, and you are also very much into portraiture. Is it also part of your you know, professional jobs?
Yeah, like, I mean, my work is essentially kind of portrait-based, be it commercial or corporate or portrait or anything like that. My work focuses around people and kind of bringing that editorial feel to whatever work it is that I'm creating, be it for advertising or for corporate portraiture or whatever. So the cameras, you know, and my style and everything like that, yeah, they all just kind of fall into that editorial sense, and I've just carried that over into different genres.
Mm-hmm. And this portraiture work, you know, the people in your images, what triggered this fascination? When did it start? You are mainly photographing people, humans, right?
Yeah, like it's, you know, I didn't get into photography at a young age. I'm 36 now, and I bought my very first camera ever when I was 24. And it was just one of those things where I bought it on a total whim. I didn't have any, you know, ambitions of becoming a full-time photographer or anything like that. It was just, I bought it because I was bored and I was looking for something to do. And then it turned out I was pretty good at it. So when it came to the actual work, I don't know, there was just something about working with people and, you know, hearing stories and finding out about people and things like that, that just kind of drew me into it. And, you know, I essentially just started working my way toward photograph people for a living. And it took a lot of work. I was scared to death of photographing people for a long time.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's you're creating something of someone and hoping that, you know, it took me a long time to build up the courage to get there. But now that I'm there, I absolutely love it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the people on your photographs, the people you have in front of your camera, they seem to, you know, feel pretty comfortable, I would say. So
yeah, and I mean, it's an experience thing, right? So I've always been a people person. I've always been good at talking to people, that kind of thing. And once I kind of started getting the more technical aspects of photography down and not having to think so much about, you know, where my light like that, when it started becoming a little bit more second nature, I could concentrate more on talking to people and, you know, finding out who they are and figuring out what it is that I want to create with them.
Mm-hmm.
And in that relationship is, you know, where you find the portrait for sure.
Mm-hmm. There is one series in your portfolio. It's called Texture Series. It's I really love
yes.
I love the images. I mean, amazing, you know, series. What was the idea behind it? Like what started it? Who are those people on the photographs? Could you tell a little bit more about this particular project?
Yeah, like I don't know. It's weird. That project seems to garner a lot of attention. There's a lot of whenever a lot of people or companies or whatever contact me, they always bring up the Texture Series. It just seems to be something that grabs a lot of people's attention. But really, all I wanted to do was I'm obviously a really big fan of black and white portraiture. There's a lot of it in my work, and a lot of my personal work is black and white, just like the Texture Series.
Mm-hmm.
But when I kind of came up with the concept, I just wanted to create something that I guess felt simple, but yet had, you know, ability to it type thing. So in terms of, you know, the subjects themselves, it's just people that I've stumbled across, whether it's someone that, you know, I've met at some random event or someone I've stumbled across through a mutual friend or something like that, just people who look interesting or have interesting jobs or anything like that. Even so much as like, you know, one of the baristas at the coffee shop I go to, I just mm-hmm. kind of pitched to people this idea that, you know, I'm creating a series of just kind of like really kind of simple black and white portraits.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's been really into it. And I don't spend a whole lot of time with the people. It's, you know, kind of like a 20-minute portrait.
Mm-hmm.
I don't try to make it too contrived or anything like that. I want it to be somewhat honest. And yeah, we just kind of go with it type thing. And I've shot it all with my Fujis. I don't know. I like my kit to be super simple. It's the Fuji X-Pro 2. It was started with the X-Pro 1 with the XF 35mm.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's one light typically, sometimes two, and just really kind of moody black and whites.
Mm-hmm. So you are inviting them into your studio, right?
Yeah, well, when I started the project, I didn't actually have a studio at that point. It's the project's a couple of years old now. I was just setting up a backdrop in any area that I could find. Sometimes it was a living room, sometimes it was a parkade, it was whatever. But now that I have the studio, it makes life a whole lot easier. But yeah, it's finding people and then inviting them in and just saying, hey, you know, I would really like to create a portrait of you. And mm-hmm. everybody's been into it, and everybody's been really happy so far. So it's been great.
Yeah, wonderful. So, okay, so you shot it. Those portraits are already done all with the Fuji camera?
Yes. Yeah.
So I know we talked before, right, when we attempted to record this podcast last week, that you are still also using a Nikon, I guess, right? DSLR cameras?
Yes, yeah. I still have the
D800. Uh-huh, uh-huh. So what would you say are the main differences for you between, you know, shooting with the Nikon DSLR on the Fuji, smaller Fuji camera, or which situations are you grabbing, you know, this and that, depending on what's the difference?
One of the major things is tethering. A lot of the times when I'm on set, it's especially if I'm shooting commercial work, I typically have an art director or someone like that on set who's watching the files come in to make sure that we're getting what we need for the client, and mm-hmm. being able to tether into the laptop and rename files on the go if we're shooting something that's clothing based and we have to match the file names to any of the product line, anything like that. Anytime that any of that's going on, I can't use the X-Pro2 because it doesn't tether. Mm-hmm. They tethered with the X-T1 and the X-T2, but those cameras just, I don't know, the form factor of them just doesn't feel as good in my hands. Mm-hmm. Thing. I prefer okay. the larger ones. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it, you know, a lot of the time whenever I have to tether or anything like that, that's typically when the Nikon comes out. So,
okay. And with the Fuji X system, when which lens would you suggest to someone who wants to get into portraiture? Like, which lens would you start with? Because you just mentioned the 35, and so many people are bragging about the 56, but of course it's a narrower field of view, right?
Right. Yeah, I typically tell people, you know what, if you want something that's, kind of like a do-it-all lens, the 35mm is the way to go. It's got the 50mm equivalent, which is, you know, essentially just kind of like your eyesight type thing. So, I mean, that lens probably gets used for probably 75% of what I do with the Fuji cameras. Mm-hmm. I also have the 56mm, and that lens is absolutely beautiful. But yeah, you're right, it's the tighter crop, or not crop, but tighter on the focal length. There we go.
Right, yeah. We have to remind ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's, you know, when you're shooting something that might be a little bit more environmental and things like that, if you don't have a lot of room to back up, it can be a little bit tight. But I typically tell people, start off with the XF35. It's kind of that beautiful all-around lens. And then if you find that you want wider, or if you find you want, you know, something with a tighter crop or a focal mm-hmm. length, that kind of thing, you can adjust from there and pick up the lenses that best suit your shooting uh-huh. style. But uh-huh. 50 is a great place to start.
Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I watched one of your on the videos on your YouTube channel. You had the chance to photograph with the medium format, with the GFX, right?
I did.
So yeah. Tell us just in a, you know, just shortly, what was your experience, and did you experience any major difference, you know, when switching gears from, let's say, from the X-Pro2, you know, from the smaller camera?
No, I mean, the nice thing about with the GFX is that the button layout and everything like that is very similar to the X series. So, you know, kind of moving in between the two, you're not learning a new button layout. The camera feels very familiar right off the bat, which mm-hmm. I was a huge fan of. Mm-hmm. The camera that I was using was pre-production, so it wasn't kind of finalized yet. So there, you know, in terms of like focusing and things like that, they're things that would have been improved after I had actually used it. But the files, they're huge, they're beautiful. The only kind of catch that I get with it being a studio guy is the 1/25th sync speed for the mm-hmm. for the flash. It just, that's kind of a hang up for me. But again, it was one of those things where when I used the camera, it didn't really hinder me in any way, but I didn't really get a chance to use the camera outside. Where that kind of thing would really come into play, where you're trying to, you know, knock down the ambient mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. So
right.
It was just, we had this crazy cold snap when I had the camera, and it was like minus 40 degrees Celsius, and there was just no way mm-hmm. I was outside in that. So, but yeah, no, the camera itself is, in terms of the layout and the feel of it, it's very X series like. It becomes really familiar with anybody who's ever used an X series camera. You put it in your hand and it just feels like you know where everything is already, which is great. I think Fuji is really smart.
Mm. Yeah, I was lucky enough to have it for a couple of days, so it feels immediately like an X-T2. Let's talk a little bit about the image quality, because now I have in front of me your texture series again, and these have been done with X Pro 1, even you said X Pro 2, right? And the sharpness is great, wonderful dynamic range, the transitions, shadows, highlights, beautiful. Are the images coming from the GFX like another world? How would you describe it?
That's the thing, is I would have liked to test it outside where I could kind of see how many stops I could get between the bright sky versus the deep shadows, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. It's I've never really had any problems pulling out what I need out of my images on the X Pro 2 or the X Pro 1 or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
The dynamic range on those cameras is already great. So for the type of work that I do in studio, I control most of everything with my lighting. For somebody who's shooting more landscape and things like that, where you're trying to pull more in off of one image, it's mm-hmm. I could see the dynamic range being a much bigger player in that. But for a lot of what I do, I control a lot of the highlights and shadows with my lighting. So, I dove into the files, and the information there is insane. Like, you can go from pitch black to an image. It's crazy. It's mm-hmm. definitely, leaps and bounds above. But I've never really needed it in terms of, the post-processing that I do mm-hmm. in my work.
We try to expose properly, right?
Yeah, exactly. get it right in camera. That's what I aim for. So
right, and many people are talking about this medium format look. There's something, and I have to admit there is something, of course. But I'm a Fujifilm photographer myself, so I'm also playing with all those cameras, and I'm trying to differentiate what's happening actually in our head, what we want to see, what is really there. But for sure, in terms of dynamic range, there is a huge kind of safety net, which is a huge advantage, of course, for some.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's mm-hmm. one of those things where if I took one picture with my X Pro 2 and I took another one with the GFX and I put them side by side on the internet, nobody would know which one was which.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm.
A lot of my work though too, like being shooting commercial and stuff like that, is I do end up, shooting work that gets printed rather large, billboard style and that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. I've never run into an issue where the clients couldn't off of any of the cameras that I have, but there's definitely that medium format look, which it's an interesting. Mm-hmm. An interesting market, but one that you kind of have to have as well.
Right. I was about to ask you actually, do you print your images a lot, like yourself, or are they being printed often?
I should probably print more. Every time I print my work, I get super excited about it, much more so than when I see it on a mm-hmm. screen. But I have a portfolio book. It's 11x17, and then I also have an 11x14, and they're both books that print on Moab LaSalle paper, which is a really beautiful matte double-sided paper. And I print a lot of my best work on that. And that's the work I take into agencies and stuff like that when I'm, doing go-sees and that kind of thing. So it's, I get to see most of my work printed when I'm printing it to show someone. Every once in a while, I'll do a show maybe once or twice a year where I'll, hang work on a wall somewhere, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think. But
okay.
Yeah, I should definitely print more. Yeah, I definitely print. Just I should print more.
Right. It's. I think it applies to most of us, because in this digital age, we have everything in front of us on the monitor, right? But we kind of like I have everything in front of me, but the printer is standing there behind me. Now when we are talking, so whenever I finish my work, I turn around and say, okay, I have the printer. I kind of keep forgetting about it, and then exactly like you say, once it comes to this moment where I actually print an image and hold it in my hand, it's just incredible feeling. So,
especially if you print it large,
right?
Mm-hmm. Like there's something about a really big print that just makes everything seem mm-hmm. like it was worth it.
Mm-hmm. Nathan, let's get back quickly to your black and white images. Your black and white, I mean, looks beautiful. There is certainly your, you know, kind of signature look to it. And I know you have developed your own presets, right? For I guess, also black and white images, right?
Yeah, yeah. Most of the presets that I've developed have been for black and white. There's one color preset that I use, and a lot of it is to pull out the dynamic range in images. But yeah, there's just, you know, I got asked a lot, you know, how do you convert to black and white? How do you do this? How do you do that? And, you know, rather than answering that email or basically just saying like, oh, it's just a program that I've, or a preset that I've developed in Lightroom, that kind of thing, I've just, you know, decided to create the presets as an option for people to purchase if they like, and then that way they can do what I do.
Okay, and so is it, it's like a set of presets. How many presets are in this? Is it a set, a pack?
Yeah, it's a pack. There's five presets in there. So there's four black and white presets, and then one color preset, and then there's also a whole assortment of adjustments for everything from exposure to shadows to contrast to everything. There's just a bunch of adjustment levels in there as well.
Okay.
So.
Well, great. And where can people get the presets? At your website?
Yeah, at my website. If just at nathanelson.com, there's a little button in the menu that says Lightroom presets. Mm-hmm. And if they click on that, it'll show the before and after of all the images. That's kind of showcase what the presets do. And all of the images are unedited. The only thing that's been done to them is the preset application. So what it does, you know, just from one click of a button. Mm-hmm. And if they like what they see, then there's a Buy Me Now button at the bottom.
Okay, great. I will make sure I will share the link with the listeners. And so you can expect some new customers,
yeah,
hopefully.
And I'll put a discount code out there for the Fuji Love crew. So.
Oh, wow. That's really nice. Yeah, thanks so much. Make sure you, yeah, you email to you. I will share it with the audience. That's great. Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Nathan,
one last thing I would like to touch on. I recently watched a video. I mean, it was your monologue, basically, on your YouTube channel. It's called Hope versus Hustle, and I really enjoyed your, you know, your thoughts.
Yeah.
I mean, you are talking about, you know, about us, I mean, mainly, I mean, you're talking about photographers, us having our dreams, our goals, and exactly hoping for things to happen versus actually working on things to happen, right?
Yeah.
Could you like elaborate a bit on this subject? Because I think it's really, you know, many of us would need a kick in the ass, right?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, right? It's just one of those things where, you know, in talking with a lot of people and everything like that, kind of, you know, what I said in the video is I hear people say they hope things happen a lot. And this is one of those industries that, you know, it rewards the hustle. So you can't really just kind of stand by and wait for things to start happening for you. You got to get out and you got to create them. If you've made a contact, don't wait for that contact to get a hold of you. You know, get on the horn and start talking to them and find out, you know, what you guys can do together. And it's a lot about just not sitting around and waiting for everything to come to you, because it won't. There's a lot of us that are all competing for the same work.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who get it are the ones that are, you know, are out there and they're making the connections and they're putting their work out there and they're getting what they need to in front of the right people in order to be hired. And it's, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into landing the kind of jobs that make being a commercial photographer a viable option when you have a family and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just one of those things where I think people really need to step up and just, you know, if this is something they want, they really got to get after it.
Mm-hmm. Have you been like this yourself, you know, forever, or you learned it during the whole process, during those years, and that's what helped you, you know, being where you are today?
Yeah, I think for me it was one of those things where when I decided that I really wanted to start going after the larger clients, you know, the bigger name clients and stuff like that, I started to realize that in order to get those, it wasn't enough just to make good work.
Mm-hmm.
You actually had to get out there and get your name out there and get talking to people and make these connections and hustle. So when, you know, I've got two children and a wife at home that takes care of them, and I support all of that through
mm-hmm.
my camera. And it was just one of those things where, you know, having a family and everything like that lights a pretty good fire under your ass. But
right.
it's, yeah, it's, it's just one of those things where I realized that if this is something that I'm going to do and this is going to be my career and, mm-hmm. you know, this is kind of what is going to be a large part of my life, I want to do it as well as I can and as big as I can. And so I'm just really kind of, I would say, you know, this past year has been a big push for me in kind of growing who I am as a photographer and things mm-hmm. like that. And yeah, you know, it takes a lot of, it's hard to put yourself out there. You know, it takes courage. It takes some, you know, metaphorical balls, whether you're, you know, male or female, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's just, you really have to, you know, be willing to put yourself out there and, you know, everything you get back might not be great, but you know, at least it's out there type thing. So mm-hmm. yeah, I've made a really big push for just trying to better who I am as a photographer. And I just think more people who want to do this need to do this as well.
And this push, you know, this hustle is like an ongoing, you know, never ending story. So, but still we are living like, you know, there is this day by day kind of, you know, sequence all the time going on. So do you have like some kind of, you know, routines or like tricks, mind tricks, where, because we have to do something every single day, right? To keep pushing this machine forwards, right?
And I mean, for me right now, it's for me, it was the long game. Like I've been spending a lot of time over the last year making a lot of connections with ad agencies and that kind of thing to keep me in their mind for when something that matched what I do came down the pipe. So if I did a YouTube video where it was a behind the scenes, and I would find ad agencies who had clients that, you know, sort of related to the work that I had done, and I would say, hey, you know, check out this behind the scenes of this shoot I just did. And it's twofold. They get to see how I operate as a photographer on set. They get to see, you know, kind of the person that I am. And then they also get to see the work that I produce when I'm there. And so it's just constantly, you know, every once in a while touching base with people and just saying, hey, you know, this is what I've been up to. Mm-hmm, what have you guys mm-hmm. been up to? Just, and really kind of making those connections so that right, when mm-hmm. the big jobs come down that match up with what I do, I'm the first person that they... It's like anything. If you've got a favorite TV show but you don't watch it for 6 months, you kind of forget about it.
Right. So, mm-hmm. so yeah. would you agree with this statement? You know, and it applies not only to photographers. I would say to all possible artists that being an artist is actually, you know, 10% of being this artist and 90% of marketing yourself. If you wanna make it for a living.
No, absolutely. And that's the biggest thing is artists. You know, you really, if you want to do this for a living, you have to approach it like a business. And that's kind of the hard part that a lot of people who have, you know, an artistic brain, they don't really necessarily dive into the business aspects of things, where I really enjoy the business side. But yeah, you really have to, there's a lot more to creating or doing this for a living than creating content is, you know, the first step, but it's what you do with that content that kind of, you know, separates mm-hmm. you from those who get hired and those who don't. So,
right. I think it comes to when it happens, when it starts to work, and then your artistic vision combined with this, you know, effort and hustle, how you say, when it comes to the actual, you know, moment where you're getting the customer, where your work is going out there and being, you know, appreciated, it's a huge kick, which then pushes us forwards again, right?
Yeah. And you know, it can create that snowball effect where, you know, you do a really great job and you're a really good person to work with and everybody's enjoyed themselves and the client is happy, and it creates more and more work. So mm-hmm. it's one of those things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it helps to I guess make you feel like you're moving in the right direction. It mm-hmm. when you get that job and everything like that, it kind of makes it feel like everything was worth it. And when that job is slow to come, that's when it can kind of feel like you're doing something for nothing. And that is when the hustle is really required, because mm-hmm. you have to realize, like, ah, you know, this is part of grinding it out type thing. Mm-hmm. But some people quit during that grind and others don't. And it's the ones that don't that get the payoff. So, mm-hmm.
so would you say that today Nathan Elson is making rather plans than hoping for things?
Yeah, I am definitely, you know, behind the steering wheel of where I'm going right now. So it's one of those things where, yeah, I'm really kind of putting in the work to start landing the kind of jobs that I really want to shoot. So I'm not, I'm not hoping that they come my way. I'm getting in touch with the proper people to make sure that I get, you know, the work that I want, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So yeah, I'm definitely in control of it.
Yeah, congrats. I think it's a great place to be, right? Great feeling. And so what would, could, can you reveal, you know, what are the projects coming up? What's happening this year? Something, you know, which you have been thinking about for...
Yeah,
for...
there's a few different things. There's a couple of like large clothing companies in Canada that like Mark's Work Warehouse, stuff like that. They're companies that I've been wanting to work for a long time that I've finally kind of started to get my foot in the door with. And I landed one big shoot with them just before Christmas, and they're going to start ramping up here right away. So going to have that on the go. And then there's some really cool projects with some strangely enough, some banks and stuff like that around here that we're going to have some interesting advertising stuff coming out with and that kind of thing. So, and also a brewery, which I am super excited about.
Okay, yes.
I just got the email a couple of days ago from an ad agency here in town. The creative director emailed me when he was on his way back from Washington, D.C. and said, hey, I have this new client and they're amazing and we want to work with you with them. And so that's going to be super fun. I'm really looking forward
to it. Wow, this sounds like fun, huh? Right? Okay, great. And so last very last question, Nathan. So what is the thing you if it's not a commercial job, if it's not, you know, what are you shooting for yourself? What's the thing you love, you know? Just in the free time if you have some. What's the thing?
Yeah, I shoot a lot of black and white portraits and things like that. You see a lot of that kind of thing pop up on my Instagram, that kind of stuff. But there's a few different projects that I want to start working on this year. And a lot of it is just, there's one project that I want to start where it's essentially people who build things just with their hands. Like I don't know, there's something about people who, you know, just have this ability to create things, whether they're painters or sculptors or woodworkers or whatever. And I just want to kind of, even welders, you know, bike builders, everything. And I just kind of want to create a series based around people who, you know, essentially make a living creating things. Yeah, so there's a couple of different personal projects that I'm going to be working on. But yeah, I don't know, there's some different things that I'm trying right now with lighting and stuff like that. Nothing that I've shared yet, but just always, you know, aiming to, never trying to get too comfortable. Always trying to try something out of my comfort zone, I guess.
Right. Wonderful. Yeah, it seems like you are really living a photographic life. This is really beautiful. Yeah. I can you know, relate to this. I'm always searching for ideas, so it's nice to nice to hear, you know, always from similar folks, you know, out there.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Nathan, if people want to, you know, explore your photography, you know, have a look at your presets and at your, you know, what's the best place to start? I imagine it's your website, right?
Yeah, my website, just at nathanelson.com, and my Instagram page, which is just at Nathan Elson. Both of those are definitely my most active accounts, if you will. And especially Instagram, that's kind of like one of my favorite things on the planet. So it's if they want to kind of keep up to date with what I'm doing, Instagram is a good place to start. And if they want to see my work nice and big and check out the presets, then definitely go to my website.
Wonderful. I will link to both of them, and hope to see you in person very soon, sooner than later.
Yeah.
And
that would be amazing.
It would be amazing. Thanks so much, Nathan, and see you around. Have a great night.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Fuji Love Podcast. Stay up to date with Fuji Love. Follow our Facebook page and join the Fuji Love Facebook Readers Group. Head over to www.fujilove.com for all the necessary information. Take good care, and we will talk to you next time.